created the other rune. This time, two stones fell out, one luminous and one common. Twofer! Richter quickly pocketed the empty soul repositories. He immediately started thinking of the much larger rune in the Dark Aberration Cave. There was probably an even stronger stone waiting for him back at the village. Each rune looked the same as before, but they no longer gave the tingle that they had when they were active. Richter looked around but didn't see anything else except for the wooden door. He walked up and examined it, but found nothing notable, not even a lock. Confirming with Futin that there were no magical traps, he pulled the door open. What he saw took his breath away. It was an archway of black crystal. Upright in the archway was what looked like a pool of oil. Richter ran forward, not even taking the time to scan the room, and laid his hand on the arch. You have found Novice Portal. This was a smaller version of the portal that had brought him to the land. It matched in almost every detail. It also matched the image in his mind of what a portal should look like, at least according to the knowledge he had gained from the Tephanim Queen. It was a major duh moment for Richter. He could have examined his last memory of Earth and compared it to what he had learned from the Queen at any time, but it didn't click until he was confronted with an actual portal. Coming back to himself, Richter took stock of his surroundings. There was nothing else in the room. Alma had already examined their new surroundings and told him there was no danger. Her mental tone made it clear that she disapproved of his lack of awareness. Richter waved her disapproval away and continued examining the portal. He knew that many materials went into the creation of a portal, not least of which were several pounds of gold. From the knowledge he had gained, he knew that they ultimately all combined to make the impossibly hard black crystal of a portal's frame. Unfortunately, he also knew that he couldn't salvage parts from this portal to make his own. The process was irreversible. As he continued to explore the Black Arch and compare it to his own knowledge, he discovered there were options on what could be done with the remains of a destroyed portal. Very interesting options. My lord, do you wish to cross through the portal? Queried Futin's deadpan voice. The question interrupted his musings. Richter thought about it. Are we sure that we'll be able to get back? Futin floated closer to the gate.
The activation and destination keys are present on this side, my lord. Otherwise, the portal would not be able to activate. It also means the activation key must be present on the far side. There is no guarantee that the destination key is present on the other side, my lord. If it is not, then you could be stranded.
Richter nodded. What Futin said was consistent with what he understood about the portals. Each portal had a specific activation key that only worked with that one portal. It enabled the possibility of incoming and outgoing travel. To travel from the portal you were at to another location required a second key, though, the destination key. For a novice portal like the one in front of him, it could only travel to one place, and so only had one destination key, though Richter knew it was possible to make copies of the same key.
How do you know so much about gates, Futin?
My memory is still fragmented, my lord, but I believe my knowledge stems from the fact that there is a portal in the village.
Richter's mind split in half. A portion wanted to say, "What the deuce?" and the other part wanted to go with, "Say what?" He settled for spluttering for a few seconds, then saying, "Where the fuck is the portal?" Futin pulsed silently in the air for a moment before replying,
The doorway to the catacombs, my lord. You have been through it.
That's a portal? Richter asked loudly. But it doesn't look all weird and shimmery, and the doorway isn't made of black crystal.
I believe the portal we are looking at and the type that you are describing are one and the same, Lord Richter. Such gateways deal with traveling down a ley line from one physical location to another. The portal that leads away from the Great Seal is an example of traveling to various levels within the same ley line. I have told you before that the Great Seal is the physical representation of the nexus of ley lines that creates your place of power. The nexus permeates every level of the catacombs. To access a door in the catacombs, you need simply to physically go through it, my lord. Then you can instantly reach that point again.
Richter got a confused look on his face. I felt a slight tingle when I crossed through the doorway leading down to the first level of the catacombs, but I still had to walk up and down stairs for more than a mile. I had to carry the bodies of those dead kobolds up while they bled and dripped other stuff all over me. Why didn't I instantly appear back in the room of the Great Seal when I left level one of the catacombs?
Did you try to teleport back up to the Great Seal, my lord? Or did you simply start walking back up the stairs?
Richter ground his teeth and closed his eyes. I simply walked back up, he admitted. Futin just floated there, the light at his center slowly throbbing. To Richter, it looked like the damn remnant was blinking at him and letting the silence communicate a simple message. That happened because you're a dumbass, dude. Richter wanted to yell at Futin for not giving him information before now, but he just decided to take the L on this one. The truth was, he could have asked. Richter let the matter drop. The question remained, what was he to do with the portal in front of them? The adventurer in him wanted to go through the portal and vanquish the bad guy. The smart part of him knew that this was probably beyond his capabilities without help. He needed to move forward in force, but until he was ready, he really didn't like the idea of leaving a portal to the Netherworld or wherever the fuck this thing led unguarded in his lands. Luckily, his knowledge gave him options in that regard. He placed three fingers of his left hand at the top of the archway, then turned them counterclockwise while projecting his desire. Greetings, Master of the Mist Village. Available keys, activation, and dark leyline destination. Do you wish to access the keys of this portal, yes or no? Richter went through the interface and deactivated the activation key. The activation key is now separated from this portal. To use this portal again, the activation key must be replaced. A circular space appeared in the uppermost point of the black crystal arch. Out of this hollow floated a small circular object. Richter reached up and grasped it. The pool of inky blackness disappeared, leaving only an empty arch of black crystal. You have found Rune of Kirimaratk. Durability, 90,000 of 90,000. Item class, rare. Weight, 3.6 kilograms. The disc was cream-colored and was the size of a child's palm. For its small size, it was remarkably heavy. One side of the disc was blank, but the other had four grooves that started as parallel lines, and halfway across the disc became a snarled mess. The circular space in the arch disappeared, leaving only smooth black crystal again. Richter kept looking at the disc. Kirimaratk. He ran the word through his mind, but his gift of tongues ability couldn't translate the word. He supposed that it might be because it was written in a language his ability couldn't translate. When he had met Zetrix, the imp had spoken in some type of higher language, and he hadn't been able to understand it. Something about the word tugged at his mind, though, so he just kept thinking about it. Kirimaratka, he said slowly. His brow furrowed. Kirimuratik. Richter blinked and then said in a questioning tone, Kirimura? Neither Kiri nor Mura meant anything, but the words sounded remarkably like Kirin and Murat. Richter wasn't sure what language he was accessing through his ability, but those words meant home and vapor, respectively. He blinked a few more times, then a slow smile crept across his face. A village was kind of like a home, and what was mist, if not vapor? Was he holding the Mist Village rune? He wasn't sure what the tk meant at the end of the word, but the rest of it made sense. Richter felt a thrill of accomplishment at having answered this riddle. Richter called Futin over and asked the remnant to confirm his guess. The orb's monotone voice didn't seem as excited about his discovery as it should have in Richter's opinion. Yes, my lord. He put the rune into his bag and accessed his inventory. Finding what he wanted, he pulled out the Rune of Chithurium. He had found this disc attached to the armor of a long-dead adventurer in a dungeon. At the time, he hadn't been able to figure out anything more than that it allowed him to use a portal. Now he tried to phonetically break it down, though. It was a bit like trying to guess what the answer was on Wheel of Fortune when you didn't know the clue,
what language the answer would be in, or even what alphabet was being used.
After a few minutes, Richter got a couple possible matches. The goat's hairy tongue, foot cloud pin, and cross muddy tree, to name a few. None of it made much sense, except for one that he hoped he was wrong about. The word Chutit, Hearn, and Iobim could be translated as Valley of the Forgotten Apostates. He really hoped he was wrong about that one. Richter put the rune back into his bag. He could deal with that later. He hadn't even found the corresponding portal yet. Richter looked around the small room he was in. There was nothing else of interest, except, of course, for the light blue outline on the wall. He rushed over to the left side of the room, and the blue color deepened, leaving no doubt that a secret panel was present. The hidden compartment was 3 by 3 feet, a perfect square. Richter searched for traps or a complex locking mechanism, but didn't see anything. Carefully, he placed his hand on one side and pushed. The small compartment swung open on a swivel, revealing what was hidden inside. Bones. Piles of bones. The wall had been hollowed out and used as a storage locker for what looked like the remains of dozens of people. Most of the bones had been thrown in like so much rubbish, but on top of the pile was a large purple pillow. It shone like velvet in the mist light and had tassels of golden thread falling from each corner. A full set of bones were stacked carefully atop the pillow in perfect symmetry, the skull taking center stage. They were the bones of a child. Richter sighed deeply, remembering a screaming girl undergoing unimaginable torment.
"Hello, Krista. I promise to give you whatever peace that I can."
Chapter 19, Day 112, Caborn 2, 15,368 EBG. Richter gathered all of the bones, placing them inside his bag. From Jorgen's memory, he knew exactly how many people had been sacrificed. He counted the skulls as he worked and found them all to be present. The final tally came to 107. Seeing exactly how much space the bones of more than 100 people took up was horrifying. Even more than that, he was shocked by how much the bones began to weigh. If not for the weight-reducing properties of his bag of holding, he would not have been strong enough to carry it all. When he was done, his bag was 124 kilograms heavier, which meant he was carrying more than 2,700 pounds of remains. Richter kept reaching into the cubby, pulling out skulls, ribs, and long bones, and trying to keep the horror of what he was doing from reaching him. When he had cleared out the remains from the Dark Aberrations cave, the bones were just what was left from victims in a forgotten past. Not so here. He actively resisted trying to think of the people he had been seeing tortured. The bones of the children were the worst part. He remembered seeing their young faces reddened from screaming. After only a few minutes, he started silently praying for it to stop. It took more than 30 minutes for him to finish. Richter walked back into the chamber with the runes and looked at the two pillars again. He was tempted to summon more mist workers and have them hammer at the column bases until they broke free so he could bring them back to the village. Two things stopped him, though. One, that it seemed inelegant somehow. And two, it kind of seemed like a bad idea to hit complicated magical runes with chisels and just hope for the best. He walked on. Alma flew up and settled onto his shoulders as he crossed back into the main hall. The ceiling braziers still burned with a blue flame. The adder slid up beside him. It was time to leave this place of death. Morning was well underway when he made it out of the collapsed basement. Birdsong surrounded him, and the dew had been burned off of the grass beneath his feet. Richter winced when he was confronted with how many hours had passed since leaving the village. He dual-cast weak haste on himself and then took off at a jog. He was able to make good time. No large predators reared up to block his path, and before long his village was in sight. The secondary trench had been dug around the village, nearly 10 miles long and shaped like a broad U, where each tip ended against the cliff faces that rose to the north of the village. The trench was at least 10 feet deep and 10 feet across. The distance was too great to patrol, so the displaced earth had been gathered to make a series of earthwork towers spaced every few hundred yards. Mistworkers continued to make the ditch deeper and wider every day. Only 3 sections across the secondary trench had been left alone. Each was about 10 feet wide. Wide enough to cross easily, but not wide enough for an army to surge across en masse. One of the sections was to the west, another was to the southwest, and the third was directly south of the village. It was to the southern bridge that Richter headed now. Each section was manned by a 5-man squad, and 2 earthwork towers were clustered behind the passages with a crossbowman on top. The squad leader saluted Richter as the Chaos Seed approached, clapping a fist to his chainmail shirt directly over his heart.
"Greetings, my lord."
Richter used analyze in what had become almost an instinctive maneuver, and he said, "Hello, Delano. Is all well?"
"Quite well, my lord. Captain Tarod left word with each squad to communicate that he is looking for you."
After giving that message, Delano gestured with his head, and one of the other guards jogged off towards the village. Richter chuckled wryly. "I bet he is. How mad did he look that I wasn't in the village this morning?" The smirk threatened to break Delano's forcefully stoic visage.
"I am sure that I could not say, my lord."
Richter laughed aloud and clapped the guard on the shoulder. "Of course you can't." His levity was interrupted by seeing the other guards clutch their weapons tightly. Richter looked behind him and saw that the shale ladder had caught up and had begun sliding across the narrow path. The Chaos Seed quickly held up both hands and said, "It's with me! That's my snake!" Still, he saw no reason to upset the villagers unduly. A quick mental order ensured that the snake would hunt around the periphery of the village, but not wander too far. The adder reversed direction and activated its camouflage. In less than a minute, it was hidden even from Richter's view. He stared at the creature. He would have to try and tame it again soon. Seeing what a danger it could be, though, he knew that if he failed to master it, then he would have to destroy it. Richter let go of such dark thoughts and started walking back towards the village. To either side of him were patches of tilled earth, and he was happy to see that the crops were thriving, but it was no great surprise. 3 factors were working to make a bountiful harvest almost a guarantee. Richter's life ability, Bounty of Life, increased crop growth by 30%. Isabella's new spell, Viral's Blessing, increased the yield of the plants by 5% every time it was cast. It had a cooldown of 1 day, but the effects were cumulative and could ultimately increase a plant's final growth by 100%. Last but not least, there was the presence of the quickening. As the tree had reached level 2, all resources in his domain yielded 25% more than they otherwise would have produced. Richter wasn't sure if this included growing food, but on his village interface, food was listed under resources, so it might. Whether the quickening affected the crops or not, the reality was that some of the plants were already massive. Crops had been destroyed during the bugbear attack, but from what Richter could see, that loss had been made up. As usual, his villagers were pleased to see him. Each and every one of them greeted their lord with a smile and a hail. He smiled back and waved while Futin and Alma flew along behind him. The mistworker carrying the knight's body brought up the rear. "Futin, go find Sumiko. She is probably in the healer's tent. Ask her to come to the northern meadow. Tell her there are tortured souls to lay to rest."
"Yes, my lord,"
Futin replied before floating off. Richter kept walking. The gate guards greeted him as well, communicating to Rod's desire to speak with him. He nodded with a slight amount of irritation and kept walking. He knew it was a bit cocky for him to have left on his own, but jeez, he was the lord of these lands, wasn't he? Tarod was just being a bit of a mother hen.
"Went on a little walk, did you?"
a melodic yet masculine voice called out. Richter looked to the side and saw Sion walking up with a broad smile on his face. He raised his hand and gave the sprite a high five. The companions fell in lockstep together. "I didn't plan to leave for so long, but things happened." Sion looked back at the mistworker carrying the nude, undead knight and said,
"No shit."
Richter just shrugged. He filled his companion in on what had happened during the morning. Sion reacted with shock about hearing the ritual sacrifices. His mouth dropped open at hearing that an undead lord could still be laired up somewhere nearby.
My mother works so hard to ensure that evil cannot gain a foothold in the forest, and you are telling me that death magic sacrifices are taking place?
I don't know if it's still taking place, but they did, and apparently it has allowed evil to endure. That leads me to the next thing you and probably the Hearth Mother need to know. I found a dark magic portal. I'm not sure where it goes, but I'm almost sure that it leads to somewhere in my lands. We are going to need to explore it and remove whatever threat we might find. Sion's face adopted a grim expression.
Just say the word.
I knew I could count on you, Richter said, clapping his friend on the back. Sion nodded.
Always. Now will you tell me why we are going up to the meadow?
A smile broke out across his face.
Unless you are trying to hide from Tirad.
Richter stopped walking. No, I'm not fucking hiding from Tirad. Tirad works for me.
Just what has he been saying?
Sion held up both hands.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! Why are you getting all worked up? He just wants you to be safe.
Maybe he can hold my cock while I piss then. Richter started walking again.
Might not be a bad idea, Sion called after him. But when he has to keep looking to find it, things might get awkward.
I wouldn't start talking shit, Sion, Richter responded without even looking back. Daniela told me some stuff about you.
Sion stared after his friend, not sure what he should say.
What stuff?
Richter just gave a sardonic smile and kept walking. The sprite started jogging after Richter.
What stuff did she tell you, man?
Chapter 20, Day 112, Qumran 2, 15,368 EBG. They reached the top of the hill, and as per usual, Isabella and the other gardeners were hard at work. She waved to Richter with a brilliant smile when she saw him. Her love was next to her. Tirad's expression was decidedly less sunny.
"Greetings, my lord," Tirad said curtly.
Richter let loose an expansive sigh.
"Go ahead. Speak freely. Let the haranguing begin."
Tirad didn't hesitate.
"It is my job to keep you safe, Lord Richter. It is my job to ensure that you remain alive so that you can lead us. That job is made much harder if you keep running out into the wilds by yourself. The monsters that we are seeing on a daily basis are all dangerous. You are powerful, my lord, but you are not all powerful. If you had run into that pack of scavs on your own, they would have eaten you, torn you limb from bloody limb. You are also not the only one at risk. Only these mists protect us from hostile forces. Where would we be if you did not make it back?"
Richter didn't interrupt Tirad while the man was speaking. The captain clearly had some things to get off of his chest. Initially, the Chaos Seed was just planning on enduring a lecture. Afterwards, he would apologize and they could all move on. When Tirad almost slipped up and revealed the truth about his resurrections, though, he understood that this was no small matter for his companion. Tirad was not a man with loose lips. The captain had operated an underground railroad in Eve for years. To put it another way, the former innkeeper wasn't the kind of man to let secrets slip. In this current moment, he was apparently so upset that he had almost revealed Richter's most precious secret. The lord of the Mist Village looked at Tirad and, as calmly as he could, said, "Come with me. You too, Sion. This is a companion type of talk." Richter led the way with his two companions, away from the garden and towards the freshly turned graveyard. He started summoning more mist workers as he walked. When they arrived in front of the monument to the fallen villagers, Richter set the workers to digging. Their gray hands formed into shovel heads, and they set to their appointed task. He looked out over the area he was standing in, and took in the almost grass-covered mound that contained the remains of the villagers that had died in the bugbear attack. He then looked at the denuded earth that marked where he had buried the remains from the Dark Aberration Cavern just the day before. Now he was about to dig another hole. When you included the dead goblins he had buried upon first claiming the Mist Village, he was averaging almost one mass grave a month. Richter shook his head. Did that mean his actions were leading to all of this death? Or was he acting like a scalpel, cutting away diseased sections of the land? If that were true, then the process might not be pretty, but it left the patient healthier. Or was he instead living up to his name?
Was he simply the natural result of being a chaos seed?
What did you want to say?
Sion asked gently. He recognized the pensive look on his friend's face and so brought him back to the current moment. Richter nodded his appreciation to the sprite. He looked at his other companion.
Tirad, I want you to know that I hear you. I appreciate all that you do on my behalf and the way that you are training our guards.
The captain nodded, but Richter wasn't done. You need to understand something, though. While your job is to protect this village and to protect me, my job is to prepare for the future. My job, Richter pointed to the mound that contained the bodies of his villagers, is to make sure that that does not happen again. I cannot do that by playing it safe. His expression softened. Also, with only a few exceptions, no one in this village is stronger or faster than me. If you train an absolute badass who can be my personal guard, all well and good. Until that time, though, I'll knock down who I can and run from the rest. I will not allow good men and women to be killed facing opponents that are beyond them. Our enemies are coming, Tirad. I have to be stronger. Do you understand? Tirad's face showed that he didn't like what he was hearing, but he nodded. Richter was thankful that he had gotten through to the captain. There was one more thing to say, though. His face hardened, and he clearly enunciated his next words. Despite any of that, though, you must never share the secret of my resurrection with the other villagers. His captain nodded again.
As you will, my lord. I apologize for my near indiscretion.
Richter held Tirad's gaze. Like I said, I think you have a good point. We are in this together. The universe has made us companions. Honor me, and I will be with you to the death. Train the men hard, and I will start taking them with me. Until then, I will not have them be fodder for monsters that are too strong for them. Can you do that, my friend? Tirad smiled faintly and clapped his fist to his chest.
I will redouble my efforts.
I know you will, Richter said, smiling back. They clasped wrists, each glad to have been heard by the other. The two men fell silent.
You guys going to make out, or should we get back to work? Sion asked.
Richter smiled at his friend, thankful to him for dispelling the small amount of residual tension.
I'd give you a kiss, but my legs are too stiff to bend down.
My lord, you should never admit that you'd be more comfortable with your legs in the air,
Tirad quipped. Richter and Sion looked at the former innkeeper in surprise, then a broad smile broke out over Sion's face that basically said, you should never have started this, man. And with that, Tirad became a true shit-talking companion. Richter chuckled as he listened to Sion congratulate Tirad. Both of them started verbally going toe-to-toe without any signs of stopping. He looked around to see if Sumiko had come up to the meadow yet, but there was no sign of her or Futin. Knowing they had a bit of time, Richter decided to lead his companions to the quickening. Something inside of him wanted to bring all of his companions into one place, despite the fact that Alora was still cocooned. The three of them walked along while Alma flew in circles around them, leaving the mist workers to dig. Richter left Futin to direct them. As they neared the celestial tree, two figures phased into view. They were the guardians Sumiko had left behind to ensure the celestial tree's safety. What had hidden the sprites wasn't exactly the same as invisibility. After they appeared, his mind knew that he should have seen them before. It was almost like stealth, but he admitted that the sprites' concealment ability was superior, albeit limited in that it only worked in the forest. No matter how it worked, it was always amazing to see someone appear out of nowhere, and he was happy that the sprites were his allies. Now the visible warriors greeted him.
Hail, Lord Richter, one said.
Well met, brother,
said the other to Sion. Is all well with the quickening? Richter asked. The two sprite warriors exchanged glances.
All is well, but the light coming from the cocoon has intensified. It also shudders from time to time as well.
The other sprite opened his mouth for a moment, but didn't say anything. Richter looked at him meaningfully and nodded. The sprite took the prompting.
I am the only one that has detected this, but I believe that I hear a voice. It is very small, but I know that it is calling to me. The voice does not speak aloud. It communicates to my heart. It started yesterday after I had gazed upon the cocoon.
Richter considered what he had just been told.
What does the voice say?
The sprite looked at him, somewhat embarrassed, but still said,
There are no actual words, Lord Richter. Despite that, I know two things. One, that I will not be alone for much longer. Two, it talks about a spread woman. I have cared for this woman for some time. The voice urges me to tell her about my feelings. It says that she is part of my destiny.
The other sprite snorted when his fellow stopped speaking. Richter looked at him. So I take it you haven't heard any voices?
No, Lord Richter,
the sprite responded with a laugh. The other warrior looked at him in irritation. Who do you think was talking? Richter asked the first sprite. The sprite who had heard the voice looked Richter in the eye and said definitively,
It is one of the pixies. She is telling me that she will be here soon.
Richter smiled. Well, that's good news. Let's go check on them. The five men walked under the canopy of the quickening. While the outward appearance of the tree was that of a gigantic willow with huge velvet-white leaves, the underside of those leaves was something else entirely. Richter looked up, enjoying seeing the light reflected off of the silvery bottoms of the foliage. Mist lights had been summoned in the past, and they still hung there, promising illumination for the next year. They all continued until they were standing right next to the trunk. 8 silver roots extended up from the ground, each 5 feet in diameter. They interwove into an octuple helix, leaving gaps so the hollow interior could be seen. When Richter looked inside, he saw the cocoon of spun silver that housed Alora and the first pixies that would be born into the land for countless years. Just as the sprite guardian had said, the light coming from Alora's cocoon had intensified. Only the other day, Richter had observed the cocoon, and he had seen filaments of gold, yellow, blue, and black light seeping through the threads in places. Now, the 4 colors shone through like a spotlight.
I hear it! Sion suddenly exclaimed.
Richter looked at his friend. The sprite's eyes were widened in shock, and he had the expression of someone listening intently for something that was barely audible.
What do you hear?
He asked.
Shh!
Sion said, waving one hand for silence. He cocked his head to the side, then he blinked and looked down. The sprite laid one hand flat on his chest. He looked at Richter and said,
I hear it here.
Sion looked at the other sprite who had heard a voice too. The sprite nodded back with a slightly relieved expression, likely pleased that he wasn't going crazy. What do you hear? Richter asked for the second time.
He was right. I am not hearing actual words, Richter. It is more like a feeling.
Sion closed his eyes, listening intently. When he opened them again, he smiled.
They will be born tonight.
Richter smiled broadly in response. Is there any way that we can tell your mother? I know she would want to be here for this. Sion shook his head in response.
Not in time to be here.
One of the sprite guards spoke up.
Are you sure that the birth will be tonight, Sion?
Richter's companion nodded.
Then I can notify the Hearth Mother.
The sprite took a pouch off of his belt and reached inside. He pulled out what looked to be an acorn without a top. The sprite brought it to his lips and spoke softly to it, then he dropped it to the ground. Before it struck, it started spinning quickly, and when it struck the ground, it burrowed in like a drill bit. In a moment, it was gone. Richter watched the seed disappear and realized it was the only means of long-distance communication he had seen since coming to the land. It drove home just how isolated and alone he was in the forest. He was so busy each day that he didn't think about it much, but the truth was he knew nothing of what happened in the world around him. The current state of affairs in Eve, whether Count Stonek was still plotting against him, or if his friends in the kingdom were faring well. The truth was, he didn't even know anything about this Jupiter-sized world, except for the small bit of geography that was the River Peninsula. Richter knew he couldn't ignore the world around him forever, but he also knew that it was not something he could resolve today.
The messenger seed will find the Hearth Mother and notify her of the birth, the sprite said.
That's an awesome trick, Richter exclaimed. How can I get one of those?
The warrior smiled.
They grow from a specific tree, Lord Richter. I am sure the Hearth Mother would be able to trade you for something of equal value.
Richter shook his head.
What has happened to you guys? When I first came to the land, you were all touchy-feely and didn't care about money at all.
He missed those simpler times. Still, being able to communicate over long distances would be worth investing in. How long until she gets the message? Sion answered.
Messenger seeds can cover many miles in an hour. She will be notified soon.
Richter nodded. He bade the sprite warriors to continue protecting the tree. The two walked away, and before they had moved 20 feet, they disappeared. He led his companions back towards the gravesite. Sumiko was waiting, and behind her was her entire troop of healers.
Really? Again?
She asked waspishly.
What did you do, and where did you find more remains? How many are there? More importantly, what is that thing you have the worker holding?
She was pointing at the Decamer Knight's body. Richter sighed and resigned himself to relating the whole story again. He started talking, making sure he stayed well out of her cane's striking distance. Her expression softened as she heard about how he had found the bones and became sorrowful as he told her about the torture these people had endured. Her face became like granite, though, when she heard about the undead lord.
I am coming with you when you go to cleanse that nest of evil.
The Chaos Seed looked skeptically at the older woman. Sumiko was indeed a life master, but she was also old. The sprite woman snorted when she saw his disbelief.
Do not worry about me, young lord. If the two of us went into a den of dead creatures, and only one walked out, I guarantee that it would be I.
Richter decided not to push the issue. There was no way in hell that he was going to take a geriatric into a fight, though, so he changed the subject. He started unloading the bones of the sacrificial victims and laying them down. Sumiko looked at him and said,
You do realize that we are running out of room for mass graves, correct?
That thought did occur to me, he said. Now are you going to help or not? She glared at him for another few moments, but then set her healers into action. They began to categorize the bones and tried to match the skeletons. Sumiko cast a spell and confirmed that the spirits were indeed still tied to the remains. Just like last time, she told him that in order to set the souls free, she would need to align the skeletons first. The mage was about to say something else when she focused on something behind him. A nasty expression came across her face and she walked away. Richter sighed and before he could even turn around said, Hey, Bayon. Richter saw the Death Mage was inspecting the Decamer Knight's body.
This is amazing! Can I have it?
Bayon asked excitedly. Sion and Richter shared a look. It was the sprite who spoke up.
I feel like I already know the answer to this, but I have to ask anyway. This is not a sexual thing, right?
Bayon glared at the sprite.
No!
Then why do you want it? Richter asked. He shared a faint smile with his best friend over the fact that they had been thinking the same thing. The two gave a no-look fist bump. Bayon kept glaring at Sion for a moment before answering.
I am not strong enough to make a minion of this level, my lord. This body would afford me a special opportunity. It is still mostly intact and already turned into a creature of death. I think I could reanimate it with one of my spells. Claim weak death servant.
This thing wasn't exactly weak, man. Believe me, Richter said. Bayon shook his head.
You do not understand. This is not just an empty body, and those aren't simple remains. I do not know how it was done, but even though the body is empty, the spirit is still bound to this plane.
He looked at the blank expressions on both companions' faces and let out a long, suffering sigh. When he spoke again, he did so slowly. Insultingly slowly, as far as Richter was concerned.
The body is still magically active. I can make use of it.
Isn't that what you always do? Richter asked a bit irritated. I've seen you make zombies before.
It is not the same thing, the gnome explained. After death, a soul normally lingers for a short while. That is what allows me to summon it back with my spell, weak commune with the undead. When I make the zombies, however, I am forcing a completely different creature, a spirit of death magic, into the body.
What happens to the person's soul? Richter asked. Bayon shrugged.
That is more of a philosophical question, my lord. There are ways to directly damage someone's soul, but I imagine that it goes wherever souls normally go after the body ceases to live.
So why are you so excited about finding this body? Sion asked.
Because it is special. As you said, I can turn almost any dead body into a zombie. My summon weak zombie spell summons a death creature to inhabit the body. The creature would only have a base level of 3, however. 10% of the dead body's experience is added to determine the zombie's level, but it is still fated a weak servant. This spell is also a summoning for all intents and purposes, and the death creature will live after a time. My zombies only last 1 hour.
Richter raised his eyebrows, impressed. His saprolings only lasted 5 minutes.
That still sounds like a pretty great duration for a summoning spell.
Bayon nodded.
Yes, my zombie spell will last longer than a similar summoning in a different school of magic. But you must keep in mind that I require a dead body to be present. Even when a body is present, the power of my zombie is dependent on the type of body present. Reanimating a squirrel, for instance, would not be of much use in a fight.
Sion spoke up.
I still do not understand why this body is different. I know, Bayon said. I will explain that right now. Any dead body is still a vessel of life magic. It will feed the living, then rot and become fertile ground for new life. A dead body is simply part of life cycle. One of the few lessons I learned from my grandfather was that when a death spirit entered a dead body, the body is altered on a fundamental level to accommodate a creature of death. This is what leads to the loss of level. Despite the body being changed, however, the corpse is still inherently a vessel of life. That is why the death spirits I summoned to create my zombies cannot stay in the body forever. This?
He said, patting the knight's head. Not at all creeped out by the sloughing skin and wide-open mouth, Richter noticed.
Has been turned into a vessel of death.
Richter thought for a second, and then thought that he understood why Bayon was so excited.
So that means...
It means,
Bayon interrupted, sounding completely giddy,
that I can still summon a weak spirit to reanimate the body, and the level will most likely be preserved.
Sion nodded.
I think I follow, but what use is a servant, no matter how powerful, if it only lasts an hour? That is the best part, Bayon said, grinning. I will not just be summoning a zombie this time. I have another spell, Claim Weak Death Servant, that lets me try to gain control of a death creature indefinitely. It would not work on a dead body, even right after death, because there is still no spirit inhabiting it. And, as I said, dead bodies are still fundamentally vessels of life. My spell would also not have worked against this creature while it was animate. The incantation only works against creatures level 7 or below. That is what makes this so perfect. I would be casting the spell on a level 3 death spirit in a high-level body. Nothing could go wrong!
Bayon had been getting close to convincing Richter that this might be a good idea, but his last statement set off alarm bells. It was like hearing, "You'll double your money, it's a sure thing!" Or even worse, "Don't worry, I'm sure I took my pill."
Richter had more questions, but Sion beat him to the punch.
"What about the large holes in it?" Sion asked. He turned to Richter and pointed at the gashes left by the Chaos Seed's short swords.
"Those are your handiwork, I'm guessing?"
Richter shrugged. "Play stupid games and you win stupid prizes. This asshole wanted to play games." He looked at Bayon. "Sion makes a good point, though," he said to Bayon. "I just killed it. Isn't the body too damaged for you to use?" Bayon smiled and spoke quick words of magic. The words of the death spell grated consonants together in a way that made Richter's spine shiver. After only 2 seconds, though, the gnome finished contorting his fingers and his hand glowed purple. At the same time, purple-black energy surrounded both gashes in the knight's skin, and the holes began to close. Richter's hand shot up to his sword hilt, concerned that Bayon might have just reanimated a dangerous enemy. Thankfully, the undead creature remained lifeless in the mistworker's arms. His heart beating wildly, Richter turned his ire on Bayon. "Shit, man! Do not start casting death magic when we are talking about reanimating a deadly monster! What the fuck is wrong with you?"
Bayon bobbed his head and apologized, but the grin that remained etched on his face showed he really didn't mean it. Richter still wasn't sure about relinquishing the body into the too eager death mage's care.
"What if you can't control it? I don't want a high-level undead running amok in the village."
"I can," Bayon promised. "Though the body is strong, the spirit is weak. I will easily be able to dominate such a weak creature. We can turn an enemy into a loyal servant. Forever!"
What Bayon was saying was starting to make sense to Richter. Even though the gnome's happy-go-lucky attitude didn't fill him with confidence, he had just finished giving Tirad a speech about how chances needed to be taken. Before Richter could respond, however, someone else spoke up,
loudly. Sumiko had been silently watching the exchange. She had almost used her magic to teach the Death Mage a lesson when he cast his odious spell near her, but she knew Richter frowned on her completely reasonable hatred of death magic. When she heard the loathsome little mageling selling lies to her new lord, dressed up as pretty truths, though, she had to speak up.
"Enough! This is wrong and should not be allowed to happen. That thing," she said, pointing at the knight's body, "is a perversion of nature. It must be destroyed." "Who are you to say what is right?" Bayon spat. "My magic is one of the basic elements, just as yours is."
Sumiko ignored the death mage and addressed Richter instead.
"Do you intend to put these souls to rest, or do you intend to profit from their deaths? I heard your story about what this knight has done, but would you really consign him to further torment as the slave to a death mage? Will you not even consider that his spirit should be allowed to pass on with the rest of his people?"
Bayon opened his mouth to protest, but Richter wasn't in the mood to let this argument spiral out of control. Besides, Sumiko had a good point. She had also reminded him that he had a quest to fulfill, giving the villagers proper rest. If Jorgen was considered a villager, like Sumiko insinuated, Richter wasn't willing to fail the quest just to give his necromancer a new toy, no matter how useful. "She has a point, Bayon. I'm not willing to ignore the fact that you say a soul is still attached to the body. What happens to that soul if you fill the body with the weak death spirit you're talking about?"
"As I said before, if you're asking me what happens to us after we die, no one knows for sure, my lord. I am sure even our vaunted life master would admit to that."
Richter looked at Sumiko, who didn't look happy, but didn't interrupt. Seeing that she wouldn't challenge that particular point, Bayon continued.
"I believe I have a compromise. I can help to determine what these people would want. Why should we so callously discuss their fate? I can cast the very first spell I was ever taught, weak commune with dead. That way, the spirits themselves can tell if they want their betrayer to move on with them."
The gnome smiled in satisfaction, plainly confident that the aggrieved souls of the sacrificial victims would reject the idea of the knight's soul finding peace. It wasn't a horrible idea, Richter thought, but he did have one question. "You told me that only worked right after death."
"That is because the soul normally leaves the remains, my lord. It should be possible to speak with them in this case."
Richter looked at Sumiko. "Do you have any objections? Besides your normal and obvious hate for death magic?" The sprite woman spit. She actually spit. She didn't raise arguments against the course of action, though.
"Do as you will, but do not complain when fooling with death magic goes wrong. We have assembled several skeletons now. I'm going to start laying these poor creatures to rest."
She turned away and with a flick of her hand dismissed Richter, Bayon, and the whole affair. Just happy that he wasn't going to have to mediate another dispute, Richter gestured to Bayon and said, "Let's begin." Chapter 21, Day 112, Qyburn 2, 15,368 EBG. Bayon smiled, feeling that victory was only a few short spells away. He walked over to the pile of remains and was about to begin when Richter told him to stop. The Chaos Seed walked over and found one particular child-sized set of remains that he had set aside. Krista's. This was his daughter. If anyone would speak on the knight's behalf, it would be her. She is who I want you to cast your spell on. Bayon frowned slightly. Richter assumed it was because the mage felt the deck was being stacked against him, but he did as he was asked.
"The spirit will be somewhat weak because we are in full sunlight," he warned. "But the binding to the bone should keep it in this plane long enough to speak. I cannot promise that the spirit will choose to speak, however."
Richter nodded his understanding, and Bayon started chanting. Purple-black light gathered around both of the gnome's hands as he spoke the grating language of death magic. The bones began to vibrate, and then a sickly green light began to emanate from them. A few seconds later, a spirit of the same color rose into the air. The body was that of a 6-year-old child. Krista wore the same nightgown Richter had seen in his vision. It was torn open, and ghostly entrails hung past her knees from a horrific wound in her stomach. Her legs ended in bloody stumps beneath. The ghost stared forward,
unconcerned with the injuries she had sustained in life. The apparition was much less solid than the ghosts the knight had summoned, whether that was because the knight had used a different spell or because the spirit was weaker in direct sunlight, like Bane had warned. Richter had no idea.
"You can speak with her now," Bane said.
Richter walked up to the spirit, who continued to stare straight ahead. "Hello, Krista?" The ghost showed no response.
"Krista, we are going to release your souls to the ether. Everyone that was tortured will finally have peace. First, I have to ask you a question, though. Do you want your father released with you?"
The ethereal girl finally looked at Richter. When she spoke, her voice echoed oddly like she was speaking down a long tube.
"My father. Yes. Yes, my father should be here."
A strange expression that Richter couldn't read crossed the ghost's face. It was there and gone in a moment, then she kept speaking.
"Please summon my father's spirit, good lord. I would like to see him. It has been so long."
She had a tone of longing in her voice. It was almost a hunger. Richter had heard enough. He turned to Bane and said, "Summon the knight's spirit. I know that you might lose your chance to claim the knight's body if the spirit leaves the body, but if his daughter can forgive him, then we will reunite them." The gnome nodded in resignation.
"Yes, my lord. I think this is a waste, but I understand."
Bayon cast weak commune with dead again, this time on the knight's remains. Another spirit appeared. Jorgen appeared as he was in life, without the undead mage's handprint on his face. He was dressed in simple pants and a tunic. Bare feet stuck out from the bottom of his pants. This second apparition was just as insubstantial as the first. The ghost was not as calm as Krista's had been. As soon as he materialized, his eyes darted around before settling on his daughter. Jorgen's shade went down on one knee and held his arms out.
"Krista!"
the spirit wailed. In that one word were centuries of pain, loss, and sorrow. In that moment, he was not an undead killer. He was simply a father, reaching for his daughter, begging for forgiveness. Krista's shade floated forward until she was in Jorgen's embrace. He wrapped his ghostly arms around her and wailed, the sound echoing distantly, just as Krista's had. Jorgen bent his head forward and buried his face in his daughter's neck. No tears could fall from his ghostly eyes, but he continued his low moan of sadness. Krista's face remained impassive as she was being held, something that was not lost on Richter. He was about to say something to Bayon, but then the small ghost's form solidified somewhat. Her body burst into bright green flames, the same color as the fires Richter had seen in Jorgen's memory. At the same time, her small hands elongated and adopted wicked spectral claws. Jorgen began to howl, this time in agony, as her ghostly fire burned him. He attempted to let go, but she drove her talons into his back, locking them together into her fiery embrace.
"My father,"
Krista said gleefully.
"I have learned so much. I want to show you, to thank you, for all the long years I and the other villagers continued to be tortured and torn apart."
The flames around her intensified, and Jorgen's wails of pain increased proportionally.
"That pain taught me, father."
Her voice was stronger and sounded not unlike a gale whistling through mountain peaks.
"I want to share what I learned. We all do."
Krista released one hand from her father's back and spat magical words in a rapid string. Her hand contorted and with a last shouted,
"Sugadet!"
Ethereal green light shot towards the bones of the other sacrificial victims. The light bathed all of the bones and spirits began to rise. Only 10 seconds had passed since Jorgen had foolishly embraced his daughter. Richter would have left the man to their judgment, but the newly arisen spirits did not seem to only be interested in punishing Jorgen. A horrible moan that stole the heat from Richter's bones came from their collective spectral throats. Then, more than 100 spirits attacked everyone present. Alma rose into the air with a scream of defiance and cast Weak Life Bolt at one of the specters. Having learned from the last battle, she then quickly cast Weak Life Aura on herself before continuing her attack. The ghost she had attacked flew towards her, while the others attacked whatever being was closest to them. That happened to be the Mistworkers. The scant seconds that it took for the gray figures to be ripped apart let everyone else begin to counterattack. Richter analyzed the spirits to know what he was facing. Name, tortured spirit. Disposition, hatred. The spirits of these simple villagers were betrayed in a manner most foul. Their torment did not end with their deaths, however, as a powerful death mage bound their spirits to their remains. They continued to be tortured on an ethereal plane, and their suffering fed the magics and life force of the evil necromancer. The once pure spirits have been corrupted and twisted with foul magic until little remains of their original selves. Their only motivation is to share their torment with the living. Level 14, health 220, mana 30, stamina 110, strength 16, agility 18, dexterity 16, constitution 22, endurance 11, intelligence 3, wisdom 4, charisma 1, luck 6. Richter checked a few more spirits quickly and found that their levels ranged between 11 and 15. The one notable exception was Krista. The small ghost child was a whopping 19. Richter scanned the information again and his eyes locked onto bound their spirits to their remains. "Destroy the bones!" he shouted. Everyone else was already in action. A few villagers had come to see why a new hole was being dug. They all ran away screaming at the sight of over 100 screaming spirits. Richter didn't begrudge them that. He was just glad that he wouldn't have to deal with trying to save them as the fight commenced. "Make the war party!" Sion shouted. He was firing an imbued arrow at the mass of spirits attacking the Mistworkers. The blast would damage the workers as well, but large rents had already been created in their gray bodies. The specter's claws were mercilessly raking across their bodies, and wherever they struck, mist flowed out to dissipate into the air. Richter nodded and selected Sion, Tarad, and Bayon. No one else from his main war party was within his sphere of influence. He would have added others, but at the last minute he remembered the challenge he had to complete, leave no man behind one. He had already been through 4 of the 5 war party battles required to fulfill the challenge, but if he added anyone new to the war party, he would fail. Besides, other than Sumiko, there weren't too many others at the gravesite. With that thought, he whipped his head to check on the healer while he cast buffs on himself. A smile broke across his face when he saw her. She was doing fine. Sumiko had immediately ordered her young healers to retreat to the path that led down to the village, far enough to be away from the battle, but close enough to help anyone wounded in it. After that, she proved the validity of her earlier boast. Her opening salvo was so impressive that Richter no longer had any doubt that she should accompany him to attack the undead lord. An unbroken string of arcane words spilled from her lips as her arms moved in tandem. Even watching for a moment, Richter could see that she was dual-casting. 5 seconds after she started her incantation, she finished by slapping her hands together. A ball of golden light shot from her fingers towards the spirits. It did not impact against any of them, but instead stopped in midair. A second later, the spirits started being pulled into the ball of light. They struggled against it, but their bodies stretched like water going down the drain. More and more spirits were pulled into the ball, and as each dispersed, the light grew more dim. More than 20 spirits were consumed by the luminous ball before the light died completely. The ball winked out of existence. Sumiko was already working on her next spell. Tarad had started running towards the spirits, sword drawn, but Richter ordered him to protect Sumiko. The captain hurried over to do as he was told. Sion continued to fire imbued arrows, but he had now attracted the attention of several spirits. The sprite fired into the collection of bones, but it had no effect. Richter didn't know if his theory was wrong or if the whole skeleton needed to be destroyed, but the moaning wail of the specters continued. It mixed with the haunting sounds of Jorgen's odd screams and his daughter's sadistic laughter. As he took in the whole scene, Richter decided that this was some major league creepy shit. Surprisingly, Bayon was somewhat useless in the battle. The Death Mage's low-level spells focused on summoning and direct attacks. Because his attacks utilized death magic, though, they would only make the spirits stronger.